So it's the summer of 2013, and I'm driving up the BW Parkway. Well, I'm speeding up the BW Parkway, and I'm listening to the hot dance banger, I Love It, by the Swedish synth-pop duo Icona Pop. You know this song whether you know it or not. I got this feeling on a summer day when you were gone. I crashed my car into the bridge. I watched, I let it burn. I threw your into a bag and kicked it down the stairs. I crashed my car into the bridge. I don't care. I love it. Etc. I'm not going to sing you the whole song. That would be truly scary. But I'm listening to this song. I'm not just listening to this song. I'm listening to this song over and over and over. And I've put it on repeat for the entire duration of the drive, there and back. And I'm making this drive all the time because it has become the perfect ritual, and I don't know why, for my trip to the BW Medical Center to have a death vigil with my mother, who was finally dying of alcoholism in the hospital. And it was a strange choice of song, perhaps, but it has this great mixture of sort of like defiance and anger and pain and sadness, but also joy and happiness and kind of F you. And I went on to read in the Icona Pop Wikipedia article that they like to make music that you can laugh or cry to. So, check. The first time I got to the hospital and visited her, she was intubated and sedated and lying there with a really intense clonazepam drip that was trying to stave off her incredible withdrawal symptoms. And so she's got the DTs, and her feet were kind of pumping in this rhythmic way that almost looked like they were moving to a beat. Dying at 66 was pretty bad. But also, her dying at 66, I think, is one of the most selfless things she's ever done. And I say selfless that she's done because she always kind of thought that she had control over that sort of thing, and we used to talk about it when I was little. I would visit her on the weekends. I was maybe 12 years old, and we would hang out, and she was the cool mom, right, because Dad had custody. So we would talk about the occult and spirituality and UFOs and ghosts, and she would tell me all these incredible stories, ghost stories and other stuff that had happened to her. And so we made a pact. And I was like, when you die, she was so laissez-faire about it. And she said, you know, if I end up disabled or miserable or whatever, I'm going to make some hemlock tea and just take myself out, you know. She was a white lady from Indiana, but she had a very Latinx kind of perspective on death. Like, if it's your time, it's your time, and bring snacks, you know. So we're talking about it, and I said, look, if you have the ability when you die to come back and, like, pop in on me, like, I want you to. Some kind of sign, not like lipstick on the mirror or like a doll baby rocking in a, none of that. I don't want any of that. But if you can come back, come back. And my sister had long ago forsaken her relationship with my very complicated alcoholic mother and was quite satisfied with that. But I had stuck with it, you know, despite the narcissism and the self-absorption and the, it does make for good stories. But nonetheless, you know, I had kind of stuck it out, even though it was pretty painful. So here I am on my way, in and off, back and forth from the BW Medical Center, visiting her and sort of thinking about all of this. And I had hoped that maybe there would be a few good times left still as well. And we almost had one. When I got there one time, about a month into her, it was a 3 month, but about a month in, she'd rallied, she was doing pretty well, and she called me and said, honey, the food here is really bad. And do you remember how we used to make ice cream in the summertime in that cool sort of like barrel-y looking ice cream maker with a big heavy motor on top, and we would pick strawberries from the garden, and then I'd sugar them, and we'd put them on top of the ice cream. Do you remember that? Yeah, Mom, yeah, I remember that. I totally remember that. It was awesome. And she said, well, you know, will you bring me some? Because the food here is pretty bad. And I was like, oh my God, of course. You know, she had me. What a memory. So I went home from work, and I got the strawberries, and I sugared them, and I put them in a container. And about 13 or 14 I Love It's later, I was in the hospital with her presenting her with the strawberries. And she had a bite or two, and she was like, I'm really tired. I think I'm gonna nap a little bit. And I just sat there with her and enjoyed being there with her, even though she wasn't awake. And two visits later, a nurse pulled me aside and said, you know, your mother hid that under her bed and let it ferment, right? And I think that she'd managed to get down some of her, like, bedpan jailhouse hooch before they took it away from her. But, you know, respect, honestly, you know? Like, I get it. I get how you want to go until the wheels fall off. And she manipulated me pretty well. I mean, I had always been one of her chief enablers. She had trained that to me. I mean, it was a thing. So about a month later, the wheels really started to fall off. And it was the end of July. My sister had come to be with me, not with her, to be with me from North Carolina. And by this point, they had moved my mother to the death floor of the hospital, which really didn't have a lot of staff. There was almost nothing going on. It was just a bunch of rooms kind of in a square that opened into like a central lounge, kind of like a death barn. I don't know. They were sort of like stalls. And so my sister stayed out there. My sister did not go and lay eyes on my mother until after she died. And when she did, it was just to walk in, stand like this in the doorway and go boom, boom to make sure she was dead and walked off. But I stuck it out like I always had. So I'm giving my sister like real-time updates on my phone as my mother's like dying actively in the room. Nobody else is around. It must have been a light day on the death floor because there was virtually no one. And I would go out and talk to my sister and go back in or whatever. Mom dies. And this is sort of not related to the story, but I had this incredible, overwhelming thought, which was, well, that didn't look so hard. I can probably do that when the time comes. And I'm really grateful for her for that. But I leave the room. We're standing out in the death lounge. The doctor's there, and my mother's maybe fifth husband or something is there, and my sister. And we're just talking through all the details about what happens next or whatever, when all of a sudden, I got this feeling on a summer day when you were gone. I crashed my car into the bridge. Came blasting out of one of the other death rooms. And I mean blasting, like Baltimore City Streets, 1980s ghetto blaster, blasting out of this room. And I thought maybe I was in some sort of like grief, fugue, state, dissociative something. So I grabbed my sister's hand and I said, did you hear that? Was that real? I had not told a soul about my weird ritual with the song up and down, right? Not a soul. No one knew about it. My sister looks at me like, yeah, girl, I heard that. Everyone heard that. And I was like, wow, okay. So I told her about it later, and we both just laughed, because that was kind of our mother. She had the last word, and she got to do it on her own terms. Thanks.